everyone, and welcome to Rewatchable number 266. Today we're going to be talking about Angel season 5 episode 19 Time Bomb and episode 20 The Girl in Question. My name is Karen and I'm joined by fellow super fan Natalie as well as two newbies, Kristen and Ariana. Hello everybody.
Hello.
Hi. Hello.
As usual, if you'd like to get into contact with us, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can also hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable or visit us at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And we're going to kick off the episode like we always do with some fun facts. You guys can get used to the sounds of our voices. And Kristen, what do you got for us today?
Well, I randomly the other night decided to binge watch. Actually, I didn't decide to binge watch. I decided to watch the first episode of The Bold Type. And this was, I believe, Wednesday night. I don't know. I was waiting for the Survivor finale to show up in our like on-demand menu because I forgot to record it. And I was like, I'll watch one episode. It'll be fine. I watched 6 episodes that night. And no, 7 or 8, something like that. And then I finished it the next morning. And The Bold Type is really, 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 really great. And I then proceeded to, like, talk about it on Twitter. And Danielle was like, oh, my God, you have to make Karen watch this show. So that will probably be a thing you will never be getting back upon. I'm sorry.
My Twitter mentions blew up. I had like 20 notifications and I was like, what happened?
It's all Danielle's fault. Yeah. She tagged you and then it was just off to the races.
And then SD came in there and it was a whole thing. Yeah.
But it's nice. A good show.
I have been wanting to see it. Definitely. It's definitely on my list. What about you, Natalie? What's going on with you?
Well, I am glad to be here for this episode, the girl in question particularly. It's actually always been an Angel episode that I really liked. But I found it like triply funnier this time because I just went to Rome for the first time. And so I just got back from overseas and part of that trip was going to Rome for the first time. And I found that very amusing watching it in Angel. Like, it's clearly not really Rome, but I did find some aspects of it very, very funny. So that, you know, guys, Rome is like, it's really weird because I've been to a lot of cities that are older than Australian. It's really hard because Australia was only really settled by white people. So like, and any kind of action, you know, any kind of Western infrastructure was only built here, you know, in this from the, you know, very early 1800s onwards, unlike some of the really advanced native cultures in places like South America and stuff. Australian Indigenous culture is really transient, so there was no development, no structures at all in ancient Australia. So we are, you know, colonized relatively recently. But I've been to some cities that had much older, you know, historical parts, like even Israel, obviously visiting that with my dad. But it is, Rome is like so old and I could not handle it. Like Paris and stuff didn't do this to me. Paris has got it's more recently kind of redeveloped. But the oldness in Rome really tripped me out and it made me very confused. So, yeah.
Rome is so crazy because they have like these like 1,000-year-old like Colosseum structures
just right in next the middle door to like
yeah, McDonald's. Like next, like, that's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah. It was real. I've been to a variety of European cities and there is a little bit of Roman era settlement in Israel. I've been to a couple of ancient towns in Israel that are from the Roman era, but this was freaking, it was so weird. And we went to this historical, like archaeological site called Ostia Antica, which is right on the coast It's kind of like a it's not like Pompeii in that there's a volcano, but it's in a preserved archaeological site where like a whole town was uncovered. It was like under a swamp and they uncovered this tree. And it's like so weird, like they've just got like it's all there, and it's like literally like 4,000 years old or something, and it's so weird, and it really stressed me out for some reason. Really, just so weird. But yeah, so Rome was weird, and I enjoyed watching the Rome episode.
What about you, Ariana? What's going on with you?
Well, first off, this isn't my fun fact, but it is a fun fact that Christian will appreciate, and that's that my friends are writers on the second season of The Bold Type, and there's apparently a lot of drama behind the scenes.
Yeah, you told me this before, that there was like really big drama with The Bold Type, like, you know, probably not stuff we should like outright say. But, like, yeah, they had some really weird transition from season one to season two that made a lot of drama.
Yeah, so I'm interested to see how that goes. Yeah. Well, I'll see. My fun fact is that I've never seen Charmed, and I probably never will. But I did see the trailer for the new Charmed, and I'm so excited for it. And I was like, I thought of you, Karen.
Oh, thank you. I have a lot of feelings about that trailer, and surprisingly, okay ones. I think I've come to the conclusion that all of these reboots that original fans dislike, they're not made for us, and that's okay because we still have the original.
I know, but that pisses me, with Charmed, it pisses me off a little bit because. And this is kind of going to – I can't get too head up, and I'm never allowed to talk to Kristen about this because the situation with Legacies and Wayward Sisters. Charmed, one of the things – it's an example of kind of the weird spin that's going on at the CW, and I don't know – well, no, I do know some of what's going on, but there's some freaking weirdness. They said – they were, oh, yeah, we're happy to go with Charmed. Like, we want the brand name recognition of Charmed. Like, as in they're counting on – it being something that people who love Charmed want to watch, but then Karen is like saying it's definitely not for us, it's for a new generation. So like the brand name recognition means nothing to the new generation. So it's like a really weird contradiction.
And they've alienated so many of the original fans, and all the three, especially Holly Marie Combs, is just
I saw that drama about like fuck you basically, like really offended by what they were saying about the old version of the series and stuff.
Yeah. So, but back to, Ariana and everything. Like, I think that it's really cool that they've changed up some of the details, especially like them not being white.
Yeah. No, totally.
First of all, I don't know if this is true, but from my perspective, it definitely feels like the people who are complaining on Twitter are a little bit racist. I'm like, you're complaining that everything is different, but I really feel like you're just saying, why aren't they the same people? Yes.
Jesus. Okay. Fair enough.
On the second, like, for me, what this is like, I was like, oh, this is like One Day at a Time. Like, let's take the, like, it's a family. Like, you know how One Day at a Time is totally different from the original? Yeah, it's just the title.
Of a struggling family,
for sure. So that's what I thought they were doing. And in my opinion, I think that sometimes that can be more interesting than, as much as I like the Will and Grace reboot, than just doing, let's bring back the three originals 20 years later. But
I'll
we'll see.
Tell you one I'm looking forward to that I haven't seen too much hype about, but I'm very excited about, is the reboot of The Greatest American Hero with Nina Simone as the superhero star.
Didn't get picked up.
Oh no, really? I've been like really not in touch with all of that, but that's very annoying because I would have stand that show really hard.
I think it was such a cool idea. Yeah.
Ugh. Anyway.
Sorry, all your dreams are dashed.
I can't talk about reboot season right now, so let's move on.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair. My fun fact, what's my fun fact? I have a fun fact about Rome. It was the first major city I ever went to. I had only gone to New York City previously to fly to Rome. Yeah, it kind of messed me up, to be honest.
This is what foreign travel is like to Rome is like such an outlier for that.
Yeah, and I basically had like a panic attack as soon as we landed and wanted to go home and almost started crying. And I still had a week left in Italy and Greece. So that was a super fun start to my trip. I got over it, but it was scary.
That's crazy. That's so ancient. So weird.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to talk about Angel episode 519, Time Bomb, now. In this episode, Angel signs up to have a baby eaten by some cult demons, and Illyria's power is contained in a wackadoodle, timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly sequence. Also, Gunn escaped from the Hell Dimension, and Wes lies about everything to everyone. So, first comes first, Gunn is rescued by Illyria, and that was pretty exciting. Did you guys think that he was going to be stuck in the Hell Dimension for a lot longer than that?
He would have been if it was up to his friends.
True.
Quote friends. Yeah.
This group,
they all hate each other so much now.
This is why I don't like it anymore. I liked it when we were friends.
Everyone hates each other. Yeah, because do they all know about Connor now? Like, do they all remember how they got where they are now?
Gunn or just Wes? Just yeah. Wes and Illyria knows too, but who cares?
Yeah. And do you guys think Connor knows? Like, they sort of didn't really specify. Just jumping back, do you think that like he came out of that situation kind of aware of the second set of memories, but choosing the life he had?
I think Connor knows because he gave that weird look at the end.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he knows too. I think it's sort of implied, but anyway, carry on.
Yeah, he did have that weird look, so I definitely agree.
At some point, just because I have literally not been on an episode since Cordelia, we talk about like the transition from Fred to Illyria? I'm sure we have time in this episode somewhere, since it's all about her.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think probably in the girl in question, there's a fair bit, and as well in terms of that.
So yeah, after Gunn is rescued by Illyria, she basically tells Angel that he owes her for this. So how do you think Illyria is going to end up playing that card?
I don't know if she has enough time left to play that card.
Yeah.
There's only two episodes left.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine that they're going to be all about Illyria. Because she's only been around like three episodes. So I don't know. I feel like the series finale should be more focused on Angel.
And the apocalypse and all of that. Although Illyria seems...
Answer if he's going to become human or not.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is not. Because then you can't have comics about him.
Or can you? Maybe it's just a whole comic series about him eating peanut butter in bed. Illyria is definitely a player in this game, though, because as we saw, like, the senior partners are curious about her as well. And she's very suspicious of Angel and everybody else because her powers obviously start to go haywire. She jumps through time and she sees that the team is trying to kill her. And it very quickly kind of devolves into that training room sequence where she just kills Spike like that. Did either of you think that that was real, that that was it for him?
My literal thought process as she stakes him and I went, no, that's not possible. That can't be permanent. No. If Spike's gonna die, it's gonna be a big thing. We've already watched him die. It'll be fine. No, he's definitely not dead. It'll be fine. And then like, that happened in, like, moments, and then everyone else dies, and I'm like, see, they wouldn't have done that. It'll be fine. Like, I literally, it was like bargaining, like, no, this can't happen. So it was rather funny in my head, too, because it's just like, wow, self, really? Yeah.
What about you, Adriana? Did you think that that was it for Spike? Did you think that he was gone?
Freddy got a whole episode to die, so.
That's fair. But yeah, I mean, she does kill everybody else. And like, even though it's not real, especially when she killed Wes and Lorne, because they're bloody and they don't just, you know, dissolve into a pile of dust. That kind of like hit me. I was like, oh, especially Lorne, because Lorne deserves so much better than everyone is giving him.
For sure. For sure.
So the whole premise here is that there's this huge explosion of Illyria's power that's going to come into play, and it's going to level, you know, several city blocks or even more than that. And they have to find a way to contain it. And initially, Angel, at least, and the rest of the team, because Wes lied, is basically just like, okay, we have to kill her now. We have to take her out of it before anything too terrible happens. This is the only solution. So if that had been the case, would you guys have been upset? Do you like Illyria enough to want to keep her around for a while?
I actually do like Illyria, even though I hate why she's here. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I would be angry if they just killed their last girl. They're going to kill another one.
Yeah, and the situation with that is a little bit difficult because of the real world, like, behind the scenes. They didn't really plan to, like, there was more planned for Fred and the Fred and Illyria story. Like, it was, you know, potentially, you know, like, going to go somewhere different in a sixth season. But Angel was cancelled early. So it was cancelled like in the February, like I think while they were still writing. Oh no, they must not have still been writing it. Maybe they were still 2 months ahead. No, they might have been. They might have been. Anyway, I think that at this time the writing was writing towards the sixth season, and then they were cancelled, basically, because Josh Whedon pushed for an early pickup, and he was like, please just tell us if we're going to get, you know, either give us early renewal or not. And they were like, okay, fine, we're cancelling you. And so I feel like that this story was, you know, the whole, oh, yeah, we've just killed off all the women and then the show ends. I feel like they were trying to do something better and then got cancelled, basically. But I think they shot themselves in the foot too many times.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's a lot that they could do with Illyria. Like, right now, after, especially, like, with this episode and, like, post this episode, yeah, no, as far as, like, the Illyria storyline goes, like, I feel like there's a lot they could do with her. Like, she, you know, is this immortal being, basically, because she's been brought back from the dead, and she's completely out of water, and, like, you know, the fact that she still looks like Fred, even though she's definitely not Fred, and, like, all of that, I feel like there's a lot they could do with her. So, I'm glad she didn't die. I kind of assumed she wasn't going to explode, because, you know, I knew that the show was kind of canceled kind of out of nowhere, so it wasn't like they had a ton of time to prep for this, but I felt like they were building to something. Like, there's a reason why there's someone else in Fred's body. Like, there's a reason why she's here. And so I would have been really annoyed had she just been, you know, written off and gotten rid of, like, more even than just like they kill all the female characters. Like, they've kind of built to this over the last few episodes, and it, you know, there's just so much to do with her that if they just, like, you know, poof, she's gone, problem solved, moving on, like, that would have been really anticlimactic. So
yeah, I really enjoy what her presence has brought to the team, in that I've really hated this entire season, ironically, until Red's death, and I've liked it since then because I feel like we're finally back to, even though now everyone's miserable, at least it's back to the group dynamics are the focus again, because so many bad things are happening to them. At least it's now we're focused back on the group instead of just like necessarily one-off things that affect them one week and then don't the next.
Yeah, I agree. And I really like Illyria's, I mean, like you were saying, Kristen, she's this immortal being. She's been around for ages. They always describe how the rest of the team and everything are like dust motes to her, like so insignificant. She feels so trapped even when she's standing on a rooftop in LA, you know, like she just does not understand how this world works and how the people in the world can be so complacent with their place. And this is obviously something that she's going to have to come to terms with, especially now that her power is gone. But I find her so interesting, and I love the way that she talks, and especially the part when Angel came along for some of the time traveling stuff and the way that she was talking to him about, you know, how they used to view them as the muck beneath their feet and yeah, all this other stuff. Like, especially the interaction between those two, because having followed Angel for years, like we see him as this wise being who's been around for a couple of centuries and he's had all this life experience and knowledge. And then Illyria comes along and just completely, like, he's so insignificant compared to her. I find that dynamic really interesting.
She's the oldest character in the Buffyverse, aside from Dawn, but Dawn doesn't consciously remember it. Like, Dawn as the key is older, but she doesn't remember it. But Illyria is, like, way older than Anya, you know, older than any kind of, you know, civilization that we know, and she apparently remembers it all.
It's crazy. So, and I think that's another reason why I find her interactions with Wes in particular so interesting. I will say that I don't particularly like it. It feels a little icky to me sometimes, which we can get into a little bit more in the next episode. But the fact that, first of all, Wes lied to Angel and said, yes, this will kill her, when in fact, like, that was not his intention.
He's kind of toxically needy about her.
Yeah. What do you guys, like, clearly super unhealthy, like, the reason why he's sticking to her. And he says very specifically, you know, this is, like, I'm not in love with that thing, but I do need her right now. Which, again, feels a little weird to me. But what do you think about the fact that Wes is so willing to lie to Angel in order to protect Illyria?
Well, I don't know. This has to be so confusing for him. It's not a good situation. But go ahead, Kristen.
Well, I was going to say, he's now a Wesley that knows that Angel was willing to lie to all of them and to change their memories and their lives. And so now I can see him justifying just about anything that he wants to do. So lying to them about killing her or saving her, like, not a big deal. Angel was willing to wipe all of our memories to save his child. Like, you know what I mean? I feel like he's the kind of character who could just say, this justifies me, you know, lying to him about what this gun is actually going to do to her.
From a rational perspective, there is no reason to kill her, and it's not really fair for Angel to do it just because he feels like it.
Yeah, Illyria, that's the kind of feeling. So it's not, like, for all that she might be, like, powerful and capable of destroying things, like, it's not her fault. It's Nox's fault. It's not her fault that she is where she is. So it's like...
And so far, all she's done is help them. She brought Gunn back in that same episode. So, as from a rational perspective, as Wes has been the one getting to know her, it's not fair to kill her. It's not fair to murder her. From an emotional perspective, yeah, I mean, I think he's holding on to her because she's all he has left of Fred. And though he knows it's not Fred, and it freaks him out when she tries to act like Fred, it's Fred's shell. It's where Fred used to be.
And what about in reverse? Because I'm also very interested in how Illyria feels about Wes, because we do know there are a little, like, there are a few fragments of Fred left inside of her, although it's very much like 99.9% Illyria. And she does.
It's like she has her blueprints. It's like she has Fred's hard drive installed, if you know what I mean, but not her consciousness.
Right. And she goes to rescue Gunn, and yes, she asks for the favor, but Wes kind of pulls that out of her. Like, I'm not entirely certain that that was not just something she did because Wes also wanted Gunn back or something along those lines, because she also very specifically says, like, I would rather be dead. I would rather be a crater in the earth than be trapped as a human, and yet she does allow Wes to do that. She kind of gives in the end, which I find very interesting.
I think it's much more interesting, like, how she feels about Wes is a lot more confusing than how Wes feels about her. Like, I feel like his feelings make sense. Hers, I think there has to be something of Fred. And I think we saw some of that in the last episode. And does she say she has Fred's memories? Because how else is she able to so perfectly impersonate her?
Yeah, she has like she's like the hard drive of like Fred is still in her. So her memories and her personality, it's just the consciousness is gone. So like, it's like all of the details are there, but the consciousness is not there to drive them. So she can act as Fred all she wants, but she is not actually Fred's consciousness.
Okay. So I feel like if she has Fred's memories, then although she doesn't have her feelings, she has what drove her to have the feelings. So there's a reason that she's drawn to Wes if she has Fred's memories. I don't know. That doesn't make sense the way I'm saying it, but I definitely agree in that I think that she did it for Wes to take bringing Gunn back because he's so sad.
And I don't think that it's just Fred's relationship with Wes that's driving Illyria, because Wes has really been the only one to give Illyria any sort of attention and respect. Like, he understands her in the way that her mind thinks in a way that the others don't. And he's taken the time to sort of get to know her. And I don't think that Illyria has a lot of sentiment in her, but I think she recognizes, at the very least, an ally, somebody who knows maybe the best way to negotiate between both her and Angel, you know, both parties. And she, her willingness to listen to Wes, I find just fascinating. But let's talk about the end of this episode, because it appears as though Angel's willing to feed, you know, okay, maybe not feed an unborn baby to cult demons, because the baby's going to be born and it's going to grow up, and then something probably not great is going to happen to that baby.
I don't know. I found this episode, the time jumps in this episode, very confusing because I'm not good with that. So I kind of lost track. But that you know, that thread of the negotiation between the mother and the demon tribe and the, you know, the Messiah and her wanting to sell it, you know, to give it to them as their god because she couldn't take care of it. It's like, I don't know, Angel being like, yep, that's right, it's your call. You know, that they're our clients, they have got the right to the baby. I don't know, who does that, like, serve? Like, I don't really understand why he came to that decision, you know, aside from, I guess, taking Illyria's advice about being, like, totally emotionless as a ruler. But why, like, it doesn't really seem to like follow through anywhere. It's just like, wow, you did something heinous. Good for you. I don't know.
This is what I mean about how, this is why I'm so frustrated with the Cordelia episode, in that it did nothing. It did absolutely nothing.
The Cordelia episode.
Yes.
Yeah.
She came back, they had this whole thing, and he's still doing the same thing he was before.
Yeah. Like, she was like, you know, put him back on track, and then it's like, he's off again. Yeah.
I don't know. What I did like about this, though, is that at least, and I think with Gunn, it'll stick, that Gunn is back to
doing the right thing.
Yes, and he was always the one who was most like black and white about right and wrong. And it's kind of nice to see him like this again.
Yeah, I'm definitely glad Gunn is back. I missed him, and I feel like he's stronger in his convictions now, which is a great feeling after him doubting himself for however long it's been. So for him to, you know, just be walking around in a hoodie was pretty nice. I liked that. He looks great in a suit, but
I do love his hoodies.
Yeah.
Before we move on, the whole, like, Angel feeding baby, you know, basically setting this child up as a sacrifice later on. I'm not going to lie, in those final moments, I kind of wondered if there wasn't some, like, cosmic balance thing going on because of the energy that had just been taken from Illyria. I wondered if there wasn't some sort of, like, maybe not evil, but, like, something that affected Angel, like, something maybe the powers that be did to kind of balance the fact that Illyria is no longer this hugely powerful being. Like, she's still immortal, she's still got the physical strength, but a lot of her, like, underlying magical power is not there anymore. And so in that moment, as he's walking away and decides to do this, I'm like, hold on. Like, is this even still Angel? But the next episode, he's back to being, you know, pretty much the Angel we have been dealing with. So
yeah,
it seems so strange. Like, it comes out of nowhere that he makes this decision to just avoid the, you know, the war, and then, you know, consequences for the child, basically.
It's really hard to speculate, because obviously I know how the show ends, but I also know that it wasn't really the ending that they, like, there was clearly, like, Joss Whedon and his, like, you know, confident, like, well, I've talked before, you know, in the early days of Buffy, about how much Joss set up and how much ego it took to do that, if you know what I mean, to set up long game arcs with the confidence that you're going to get to tell them. And so speculating about kind of the end of Angel is difficult, because we don't know exactly what was set up for a much longer arc than they got. And obviously there's the comics, and there's he diverges into some weird places in the comics. But the situation that I sort of saw here, and I'm going to kind of speculate it like I'm a newbie, because I'm sort of speculating about off the end of Angel, is the Illyria kind of, you know, is like, you know, you only succeed by, like, serving your own ambition. And Angel's had these hits of, you know, Cordy dying, and then Connor, and then Fred. Like, he's had all of those hits, and so maybe he's just decided to really start this journey of serving his own ambition, like, just playing the game, you know, in terms of the human, you know, like the Shanshu human prophecy. He's just like, I'm just going to frickin' get to the top and get every resource available so I can get that human in me and get it the hell out of here and just have my life. So maybe that's it. But none of that is dramatically resolved in the next two episodes. So
it doesn't make sense, in that none of it makes sense. Like, with everybody dead now, and with Connor, like, why is he still there?
I don't know. Like,
why is he still there?
I don't know.
And also, like, this isn't the way to get his humanity. Wasn't his humanity, like, he had to be a champion or something?
Which is, like, I think, Natalie, I think what you were saying makes sense, and I mostly agree with that, although that seems very selfish, and I'm not saying that Angel can't be selfish, but I think
maybe he's trying to be.
maybe. But I also think, like, you know, serving your own ambition, what is his ambition? He is a champion. He does want to do good. And maybe that is because eventually he wants to become human again. But he also believes in doing the right thing.
Does he? Or is he just doing it because he's guilty? Like, how pure are his intentions? Like, that, I don't know. I have no excuse for his behavior in this episode. I'm just theorizing, you know, like, but like, he's so driven by guilt. Like, and he is, you know, he gets so impatient sometimes with his situation and so impatient with doing right and wrong. Like, how earnest is his need to help? Is it, you know, is it totally guilt-driven? Because we know how toxically bad his past was. We know the amount of guilt he suffered when he got his soul, whereas some, you know, of the others, obviously Spike had some trauma. But, you know, we've talked a lot about the difference between Angelus and Angel versus the difference between some vampires sold or unsold. So, so there's, like, I think that, you know, the Angel to Angelus breach is so huge that it's still really troubling, and we don't know how close he'd be to right or wrong just for kicks, like, without that baggage. But I don't know, depends what you think, you know, makes someone, like, you know, makes their truth, whether it's like experience or just the way they're wired or what.
Yeah, I don't think his intentions are 100% pure, but, like, he's not the greatest person on the planet. Like, everybody is going to have some selfish intentions when they go about doing something like this. And I think that guilt is a huge part of what drives him, but I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. Like, he's still trying to make up for everything he's done. And in some ways, you know, some people could say that he has made up for that in all this time. And the fact that he wants to just keep doing it, I think, is a testament to him not letting himself off the hook, but also just knowing that this is the right thing to do. So I can appreciate that a little bit. All right, I want to jump to favorite scenes and favorite lines now. My favorite scene is basically Spike embracing his role, trying to study Illyria and getting, like, super into it, even though he didn't want to do it to begin with. And when Angel tells him, I think we should stop doing this because, like, maybe she's the one studying us, Spike is like, but I think he's having some fun with it. Natalie, what about you?
Sorry, what? Repeat the question.
What was your favorite scenes?
Oh, yeah. Okay, sorry. My favorite, I don't know. I don't know if I had a favorite scene in this episode, to be very frank. I found a lot of the scenes interesting. I like when Gunn interrupts the, like, when Gunn is back to himself and he interrupts the deal. Like, and, you know, he's like, hey, you know, this is a sacrifice, and he tries to go with that. We obviously never see the mother's reaction clearly to Angel making that final call, but I like Gunn's defense of that and him sort of coming back to that less corrupted self.
Ariana, what about you?
My was when Illyria, you know, walks through the portal and just takes Gunn back, like, no big deal. But also shout out to, I'm loving Gunn's new wardrobe that they've given him now, where he's like wearing zip up hoodies to work. Very modern, chic.
Yeah. It just feels like Gunn. Like, I mean, his suits were nice, but this just feels like he's back. Like, you know what I mean? Just mm-hmm. something about him that feels back in a hoodie. I don't know why.
Yeah. And Kristen, what was your favorite scene?
It's not really a scene, but just basically every moment that Lauren is in spy mode and is yelling at Angel for not using the walkie-talkies correctly. Like, oh my God. Like, just yelling at him, like, do you even know how to use this thing? Is yours even on? Like, every time the time shifts and we get another glimpse at Lauren, like, it was cracking me up.
So I just appreciate him.
It's very hard for that man to go incognito, but he tries.
He did. It was a noble effort. It was.
Yeah. Favorite lines now. I had a little trouble picking one out because this episode, I did enjoy this episode, but it wasn't like stand out to me. But I did like when Lauren said, well, I tell you what, still like him better than Eve, talking about Hamilton. And I just feel like Mitch in particular really will appreciate that line.
I loved that line. I hate Eve.
All right, Natalie, what's your favorite line?
Face you want to punch. I actually really liked the Illyria. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I really liked when she was talking to Angel about being a, the position that he's in and his moral compass. And she says, a true ruler is as moral as a hurricane, empty but for the force of his gale. And I don't know, there's something about that that I liked and found truthful in terms of like the neutral and sort of above and like, you know, kind of above it all idea of some kinds of like, you know, ancient kings and stuff. I didn't agree with it, but I found it true, but didn't agree with it. So that it made me think.
I do like a lot of what she says. It's very poetic in an evil sort of way.
I liked the way that like the line and the sound of it sounds true, but I really don't think it is. Like, I feel like if you're ruling like a hurricane, isn't that when like people rise up and kill you? I just feel like that's not accurate.
Well, yeah, I feel like, you know, it's talking about the kind of like a King Solomon-esque, that you can't have an emotional investment in ruling, but I also don't think Illyria's type of ruling, it was like a fair and just type,
That makes more sense if you're saying the morality of a hurricane. Because I was like, you're just like causing destruction with no sense. That doesn't sound. But anyway.
Yeah, but maybe let's not take life advice from Illyria. Seems like a bad idea.
Yeah.
All right, Ariana, what's your favorite line?
Mine was when Wes and Gunn are talking about Illyria, and they're like, hey, so, like, what's she like now? Wes goes, she still thinks she's the god king of the universe. And Gunn goes, so she's, like, a TV star? No, nothing that bad.
There was a little fourth wall break there, but mm-hmm. I kind of enjoyed it. And especially the way Wes delivered that. And shout out to, like, all his craziness, because he did that really well. Mm-hmm. Just the way he moved and everything was so different from what we've seen before. That's cool. All right, Kristen, finish this up.
And mine comes from Angel. And there are two reasons I love this quote. But the quote is, God, beatifying. Has it ever occurred to you that now might not be the best time for when we were muck stories? First of all, I love the speechifying.
I love the delivery. I love the delivery of this line so much.
The word speechifying is brilliant coming out of his mouth, and I love how he delivers it. Like, it is. It was such a perfect moment in the middle of all of that insanity. Like, the timelines are changing every like 30 seconds and he's having this back and forth with her and she thinks, you know, he's trying to kill her. And yeah, it was a really, really great moment. And I love Angel when he gets like this.
Quick fun fact. I don't think we mentioned it before this episode. The mother of the baby, Amanda, is David Boreanaz's wife. In real life, his still wife to this day. They had a bit of a controversy affair situation, but got through it and they're still together. And they have like a marketing business together. So, yeah, that is his real wife and the mother of his children. So that was especially callous, basically.
Wow. All right, let's jump into Angel episode 520, The Girl in Question now.
In this episode, Buffy's cookie dough is having a wild spring break with the Italian immortal, who is always on his way to steal your girl from Angel and Spike. Also, Illyria pretends to be Fred to the Burkles, and Wes is not having it. Oh, there are a couple things in this episode. First of all, I really dislike this episode. So it was kind
really?
Of,
I think
yeah.
it's really funny, but okay, you're
well,
allowed.
My issue with it, I think it would have been funny if it was earlier in the season, but we are yeah. literally two episodes
it
away from the finale.
It is wasting time, I understand.
And it's so,
that, yeah.
And I like Spike and Angel antics, especially when they're like bantering, but they're not really fighting. I really love that dynamic. But right now, I just feel like, why are we taking the time to be this stupid when, you know, the apocalypse is coming and the world is going to fall apart?
The thing that annoys me most about this episode is that it's all about Buffy and we never actually get to see her.
Yeah.
And that's just, like, frustrating.
Apparently she, or maybe Michelle, was meant to guest star and then they couldn't do it. Like, I think Michelle, it was meant to be Dawn instead of Andrew. If you know what I mean. Not that that would have made a huge amount of difference, but apparently they originally wrote it for Dawn.
Oh, see, I could see that. I was kind of wondering why Andrew was, like, just randomly. Like, I mean, it makes sense, but it also is just, like, random. So if that was supposed to be Dawn, that makes a bit of sense in my head.
Yeah. The one thing I always remember from this episode is the club scene where you only see her dancing. And I just remember being so disappointed that we didn't actually see Buffy, like really upset that we didn't actually see Buffy. But like now I understand why and, you know, all that other stuff. And it doesn't bother me as much, but one of the few things.
Yeah, there's huge, this is huge hashtag read the comics episode. This is it was cutting in and out, so I don't know, Karen, how much you confirmed, like, we wanted to talk about this. There's so much weirdness in the comics afterwards, and there's a little bit that we can talk about in our wrap-up episode, but this episode in particular is totally it's not different for Spike and Angel at the time. What they're experiencing at the time is real, but there's a huge aspect of this episode that is totally blown out of the water by the canonical comics. So yeah,
I think let's talk about that in the wrap-up episode, because there are a few things from the comics that I think would be interesting to share with everybody.
And right now, to Spike and Angel, this experience is real.
Okay, so let's jump into, first thing first, I think probably for me at least, the more interesting part of the episode, which was Illyria pretending to be Fred. So, newbies, what was your first reaction when Fred walked through the door?
It was so creepy for me. And, like, it was bizarre because I know in my brain that they're both played by Amy Acker. But now I've gotten so used to, like, Illyria being so different than Fred that I don't know. It was so weird when she started acting like Fred. It was very creepy for me.
You just know that it's not her at this point. Like, it does feel so wrong.
Yeah, I think prior to this, I didn't know how much of, like, Fred Illyria was aware of or knew. Like, we kind of knew she had some of her memories and, like, she knew that this was Fred's body, but I don't think we knew a whole lot about that dynamic. So to learn in this episode that basically she's got everything that makes up Fred except for Fred's consciousness and she can tap into it whenever she wants just is incredibly, like, twisted and weird. And, you know, like, we see just how manipulative she could be because of that. Like, we see at the end of the episode how that could be used, especially against Wes. And, like, yeah. So I was kind of taken aback by it. And as the episode progressed and we learned more and more about, like, what she actually knows and how she can pretend to be Fred despite having never met Fred, it just gets, like, creepier and creepier.
I found it interesting that she said that about the grief, like that she was like, you know, you smell of grief all the time, couldn't handle it from them too. It's like, you know, in some way that she doesn't quite understand herself, like she doesn't want to spread hurt, if you know what I mean. Like she, like I said, you know, I'm not totally sympathetic to her, but she definitely didn't kill Fred, if you know what I mean. Nox killed Fred. Illyria, you know, was the weapon, basically, the unaware weapon of that. So, you know, and so, you know, she kind of knows the hurt that it's caused, and it's not like she's really doing it out of like, there, don't want you to be sad, but she's uncomfortable and unhappy about for, you know, reasons that I guess she hasn't really processed yet, but it sits badly with her. So that was kind of interesting to me.
And Ariana, you wanted to talk a little bit about the transition between Illyria and Fred, right? Are you talking about her mannerisms or literally when Illyria started taking over Fred's body?
Yeah, I don't even know anymore. Like, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure this has been beaten to death already, but it was like very disappointing, I think, when Fred died, even though it was such a good episode.
Yeah.
And I feel like it would have been, I mean, I don't know what they were planning to do in the future. And Illyria's cool, but it's a bummer that they killed Fred.
Yeah, A Hole in the World is an amazing episode, and one of my favorite lines of the whole series is literally the delivery of Spike being like, there's a hole in the world, feels like we ought to have known. That to me was like so loaded as like more than just being about a hole. And yeah, that line has stuck in my head for a very, very, very long time. And it is a very well done episode. Very deep, lots of layers and moral dilemmas and stuff. But yeah, again, I don't know, maybe they planned some sort of thing to redeem Fred's, you know, arc in some way, like, but they didn't get to obviously take it further than this season.
It just sucks so much because, I mean, there was a whole episode devoted to this. Mm-hmm. like Cordelia and Fred, each in their own way, was so different as like a heroine.
Yeah.
Like they were each a trope, and then they flipped their own tropes.
Yeah.
To be something unique on TV. And it's just such a shame that they both died. And now we have Illyria, who is cool, but she is just still like, she's a little bit more about what we're used to seeing. So I don't know.
Mm. Although a very powerful
the girls.
Yeah. And I definitely agree with that. Although I also like Illyria, and I think having a very powerful female antagonist is probably the best word right now, is pretty interesting. But at the very least, I'm absolutely in love with the way that Amy Acker can transition between Fred and Illyria, because you think so much of it is the makeup and how she looks and how alien she looks. But then when she's dressed as Fred, she does the same weird head tilt and the deeper voice and the speech patterns. And you just realize, holy crap, like she could just act the hell out of this. And I love that. So a big question I think was on everybody's minds was Wes going to take advantage of Illyria's ability to look like Fred?
I definitely thought, like, not I thought because I've seen it, but I, in that moment, when we're on this rewatch, I definitely vibed like, oh my God, he's going to kiss her. Or when he told her, like, don't look like Fred, look like anyone, you know, look like something else, but then still fuck her. Basically, I thought that he was going to be like, okay, so you're like, I'm going to hook up with you, Illyria. Even though I know that didn't happen, I vibed the space for it, basically, if you know what I mean.
Well, I feel like if there was another season, that would have definitely happened. I mean, I think if there was another season, what would be interesting is him, like, weirdly falling in love with Illyria. And then they find a way to, like, bring Fred back. So it's, like, half Fred, half Illyria.
on the timeline. And then so he's like in love with both of them. And then they're like both angry. But like in The Host. That Stephanie Meyer book.
Oh my god. That would certainly be a love triangle. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else you guys want to talk about Illyria and Wes in particular and the Burkles?
I do kind of feel like, in a weird way, Illyria is probably like a better match for Wesley. She's got more of like the Lila vibe.
Yeah, that's true.
Jesus.
Like, I mean, Wes needs a little bit of darkness in, you know, like Fred was wonderful and all, but like I don't think they could have worked. Like, he needs his ladies to have something kind of twisted about them, which is so weird, but that's kind of what I think Illyria is. Like, she's, because she's so old and does not have a, you know, shiny sparkly past, there's just something about it that I think, yeah, she and Wes are definitely better matched.
All right, let's talk about Italy now. So there's
so dumb.
It's so dumb. There's a head. There's a head that needs to be brought back from Italy. And so Angel gets word that, hey, Buffy is also in Italy. All of a sudden, this job is really important to both him and Spike. And the only reason, by the way, Angel knows where Buffy is because he sent somebody to spy.
Her. Oh, isn't that cute? No, it's awful. especially after that whole arc with the Andrew coming to LA and him being like, yeah, none of us cool, you know, anymore. He knows that Buffy is upset.
I have a question. Does Buffy know that Spike is alive yet?
I don't know. She certainly has the capability to know, but it may be that Spike, you know, has, you know, asked that people don't tell her because he wants to figure it out himself. Yet he blusters through to Italy, so he would have to be like, surprise, yeah. I'm alive.
I also find maybe it she does difficult to believe. I find it really difficult to believe that, like, Giles didn't have a way of finding out.
Mm.
Because he knows the Angel works at Wolfman Heart. And even Andrew, I feel like Andrew would probably, he has more loyalty Buffy, yeah.
I don't know. Maybe she kind of, like, saw that he was, like, being awkward on his face and he would cracked and told her. But I did kind of like Andrew in this episode.
So did I, although, and I really didn't like, okay, so my issue with this episode basically comes down to Angel and Spike's possessiveness over Buffy and which one gets her and all this other stuff. And I think they both recognize very obviously that, like, that's not realistic, that Buffy is going to do what Buffy wants to do. And I think in the end, like, they kind of both come to that conclusion. But it was a very silly episode that I think has a lot of problematic undertones. And I think I just don't find it that funny anymore.
No, valid. I do get it. I feel like, I don't know. For me, I feel like we were meant to think they were both being really stupid. But yeah, I get why it's a bit of an issue.
So, like,
we're not meant to think it was cool and fun that they did this.
Yeah. Were you guys expecting to actually see Buffy in this episode? Or did you already know that it probably wasn't going to happen?
I was not expecting to see her because I don't believe Sarah Michelle Gellar would come back. But
for this, at all.
I feel like she would never come back to Angel. She seems like that kind of person. But I just don't see why they felt the need to do an episode about Buffy without Buffy. Then just don't do the episode. Do a different episode.
Yeah,
I mean, with somebody willing to come back.
I think the the chasing, like chasing after her and never actually like reaching her, I feel like that has like some narrative weight. Like it could be a fun way to have an episode about Buffy and not do it. But like the way that this was done and the fact that like, you know, there's this creepy immortal being who may or may not have her under a spell, and we know Buffy and we know how badass she is, so like to go through this entire episode and like, you know, we never actually see her, so we don't necessarily know things, so it's like it's just weird, and that I think it could have been really fun to watch them chase after Buffy and never, maybe she's, you know, training slayers and is just, you know, hopscotching around the world, and the boys just have no way to keep up because she's awesome. Like, that would have been a different way to do this and still have that, like, tease of, are we going to see her, are we not? That's totally fine with me. It's just the fact that this creepy immortal being is involved that kind of weirds me out.
And I think I definitely appreciate the idea that they attempted to do a crossover like this, because I always like it when shows that have spin-offs or crossover capabilities reference other shows and everything, because it just solidifies that, yeah, these two things do take place in the same universe. But again, like, I just remember watching this for the first time and seeing her so close and yet so far away and us never getting to see her. And of course, like, I was sad Buffy was over and everything, and it just felt like a very unfair tease.
I think it was necessary for this show at some point to come to a real head about Spike and Angel's history with Buffy. Like, I do feel like before the end of the series, they probably needed to kind of address that not elephant in the room, but, like, you know, it came up every now and then, but they needed to address it in some way. Though, I don't know if this was right, but, yeah, it was. I feel like it was something that needed to come to a head.
What I find much more interesting is Spike and Angel's relationship, because we get more flashbacks in this episode and we see maybe for the first time Angelus and Spike kind of being super friendly toward each other.
I love that, to be honest. It was great. The whirlwind flashback of the four of them. And yeah, Spike and Angel are best allies when something is coming against them together. Like, that's mm-hmm. why they're funny.
Yeah, I loved it. It was really great, and it was interesting to see Angelus in less of an evil light, because you see a little bit more of Angel in him, I think, in that flashback and everything. But, you know, fast forward to present day and we see how Angel and Spike interact now, and it's just, I don't know, I find it interesting. And the two of them going to Rome together to try to save Buffy, who doesn't need saving, is very interesting because their relationship is so contentious most of the time. But I don't know, they make it work somehow. Mostly I'm just thinking about that scene where Spike forces him to get on the back of the thing, and it's just so funny. I love it. What did you guys think about seeing Drew and Darla again?
Oh, man. Okay, when we started this episode, and I don't even remember what scene we were in. I think they were at Wolfram and Hart. And then all of a sudden, I see guest star, and I see what's her face?
Julie Benz and Julia Landau. Well, yeah,
I missed Julie Benz's name, but I saw Julie Landau. Or yeah, I saw Drusilla, and I went, "Oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God!" So like before she even was on screen, I was like, "Oh man, we're going back." Okay, all right. I actually really enjoyed the flashbacks in this episode because, like, it was less about the girls. I mean, they were there, and it was a time when they were there, so they were necessary. But it was just, you know, a good little nod. It's been a while since we've had a good flashback from them, so it was fun to kind of remind ourselves, like, there was a time when they were actually friends and, you know, had the same goals and didn't have to butt heads all the time. And it was nice to get a glimpse of that.
And the whole, like, the immortal is violating our women, but they were like, no, no, we pretty much let him do whatever he wanted.
But that you was never like, let us do that. You never let us do that. Like, yeah. The look on his face thing, it's like, yep, yeah, you're right, we don't.
Good for you, girls. What did you guys think of the Italian Wolferman Hart?
I loved the director. I want her own spin-off. Like 12 years late, but I don't know. I found her really funny for some reason.
I mean, she's cute. I thought, you know, what a difference compared to Angel running, you know, LA's Wolfman Hart. You've got this incredibly, like, gregarious, welcoming person, and then LA gets Angel. It's kind of funny.
And then LA gets Angel.
He's so grumpy.
He is grumpy. What did you think of it, Ariana?
I guess I liked him. It bothered me that it looked identical, so I could tell. I was like, clearly they used the same set. But, I mean, it would cost too much to build a new one.
And I loved guess it was that it looked supposed to be, but it yeah. was the same. I love that it looked identical. It was pretty funny, though. Well, at the end of the day, the boys don't get to meet up with Buffy. Andrew is super cool now, which is great. And the Immortal sends his regards by shipping the head back to the LA branch of Wolferman Hart. So there will not be a demon war on his watch. Kind of disappointed we didn't see the Immortal, huh?
I mean, he was probably sexy.
Yeah, basically there's this, you know, being who's been one step ahead of Angel and Spike basically their entire lives, and that's kind of funny, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's jump into our favorite scenes and favorite lines now. My favorite scene was basically Spike being sad about his jacket. Because even though I don't like the way that he got the jacket, you know, that is his second skin. And it made me sad that it was destroyed. But then he got 10 more, so it's fine. Natalie, what was your favorite scene?
My favorite was, well, I was going to say when Angel gets on the back of the Vespa, but I think one of the favorite lines includes that as well. So I like the flashback to, them being really, to Drew and Darla being all cozy and the boys being very confronted. Basically, Spike teaching Angel about being cuckolded and then realizing Drew was in on it too. And so, yeah, that was amusing.
Ariana, what about you?
Mine was Ilaria's terrifyingly accurate impression of Fred. When she first walked in, it was so creepy. Even though, like, I knew it was coming. Like, when the parents showed up, I was like, oh, she's going to pretend to be Fred. But it was still creepy.
I just love that you wrote, because I legit forgot for a second that they're played by Amy Acker. I did. Kristen, your favorite scene is definitely up there for me, too.
Yeah, mine was the slow-mo fight scene. In which Angel and Spike end up taking slugs at each other by the end. And, like, first of all, slow-mo fight scenes are brilliant because you see, like, faces moving after the punch has landed, and it's like, oh! Like, they're always entertaining. Spike, you know, kind of in the moment hits Angel, and then Angel hits him back, and, you know, watching all of their reactions in slow-mo is just brilliant. And so, yeah, definitely my favorite.
And for favorite lines, mine is when Spike gets on the Vespa and he turns to Angel and just goes, hop on, little mama.
Yeah, here's the way that his grumpy face sells when he goes like, oh, and he like puts his hands around Spike to hold on, like the grumpy face as he kind of like his shoulders slump and he settles down is very amusing.
That's great. And Natalie, I did love yours too, actually.
The quote of mine was when they, again, back in the flashbacks when they were arguing about the the nun, like, you know, arguing about not getting into the party of the immortal, and they're going on, you know, oh, and he gave the nuns, and he gave nuns safe passage. And immortal doesn't sound like all that bad a guy, to be honest, from my aspect perspective. So are my nuns, and Willie and Spike, you know, William was like, yeah, nuns are your thing. Everyone knows that. They respect it. They respect us. And they were just so funny.
We don't really often see Angelus being sort of a flop like Angel is, so it was very disconcerting to see this, but very funny at the same time. And Ariana, what was your favorite line?
Mine was when Spike and Angel were discussing and worried that Buffy might be falling for the immortal. And Angel goes, she'd never fall for a centuries-old guy with a dark past who may or may not be evil.
And they sort of just look at each other. That was great. And Kristen.
Kristen.
I feel like this, first of all, I love this, but it's also for Caitlin because I'm pretty sure this would have been her favorite quote too. Angel says, but she's not baking yet. You gotta wait till she's done baking, you know, till she finds herself, because that's the drill. Fine, I'm waiting patiently. Meanwhile, the immortal's eating cookie dough. It's just, yeah, the cookie dough.
Very good. All right, so if you guys want to get into contact with us about this episode or our couple upcoming episodes, we're almost done, you guys. You can email us, rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter @re_watchable. And find us on rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. We love iTunes reviews, and it helps other people find the podcast. And we especially love 5-star iTunes reviews. So if you rate us 5 stars, then I will order 10 of your favorite jackets for you, along with a fine assortment of shoes.
Oh my gosh. That jacket, we didn't talk about it, but that jacket, I was so distracted by this jacket. I was like, oh my God, it's so great. It's so great.
It looked very awkward. Yes, the jacket looked so awkward on Angel. It did not fit the aesthetic. Okay, and we have one piece of feedback this week from Twitter. Ariana, will you grab that for us?
Sure, this is from She-Ra Princess, and she says on Buffy, or he, it's we can have boy princesses, on Buffy Angel 237, so happy to hear Mitch again. His insights and theories are so enjoyable.
Aww.
That's nice. Mitch Aww. Isn't here today, but he'll hear this.
Yes. We love Mitch. Very cool. All right, let's go to the finale episodes. We've got Ariana's Assumptions, Kristen's Contemplations.
Oh, crazy. This,
this is for Angel, 521 Power Play, and 522 Not Fade Away.
I feel like this is a great responsibility that I am
completely unprepared for. I totally forgot that we had to do this.
I'm completely not ready for this response.
The final prediction of the okay. Buffyverse.
Oh my God.
Oh, okay. Sorry. So, power play. There's got to be some sort of like wordplay here where someone's going to end up with some sort of like power that they don't currently have, and this will affect the apocalypse somehow. That's my prediction. It's incredibly vague, but that's my prediction. Any thoughts, Ariana?
No. I think that this is going to be a two-parter for okay. the finale. So, I don't know. I don't even have anything, like, funny to predict. I don't know. I don't know. It's the end. I'm going to guess that Angel does not become human because they have not had enough time to set it up. That's my prediction. But well, that he learns to accept his vampirism.
I kind of love the title for the finale because, like, Not Fade Away, it doesn't necessarily sound right. Like, it sounds like there's something wrong with the grammar almost, but what it, you know, it basically has this, like, we're not fading away. It's the end of the series, and it's an unexpected end to the series. So, like, it's not, they're not going to fade to black. Like, it's going to have some sort of punch.
It's also a song title.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
I don't know all yet. Yeah, no, definitely didn't know that.
Yeah. Anyway, Carrie, but perhaps if you had and you'd Googled it, maybe it would give you some inspiration. I don't know if it would.
I guess Joss Whedon will kill somebody because he likes to do that on finales.
Possible. I feel like it's cheating if I look it up, so.
Well, guess what, guys? You can watch the final two episodes of Angel right after this.
Right now.
It can be over for you that quickly.
Wow. Guys.
It was over for me a long time ago.
Oh my god, that is the saddest thing you've ever said. I'm so sorry. Well, just so everybody knows, we are narrowing down our choices for the next show. It's getting pretty exciting, so as soon as we know for sure what we're doing, we'll announce that. But that is not right now. We still have two more episodes of Angel, definitely a wrap-up episode. Maybe we'll do an episode about the movie as well. So let us know if you guys would be interested in hearing us talk about that. But until next time, I'm Karen.
I'm Natalie.
I'm Mariana.
And I'm Kristen.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
This cat is going to be a problem. Hold on a second.
Yeah, you're super cute. I love you. Okay, shut up.